Hi, I'm Francesca, a registered nutritional therapist, and you're listening to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast. Welcome. My aim is to bring you down-to-earth, conversational episodes that help you develop a deeper understanding of how your body's changing in your 40s, and most importantly, how you can support yourself throughout this wonderful transitional phase of your life. Join me for my solo episodes and also episodes with guests for fun, fresh, truthful chat on all things health and happiness in your 40s. And now onto the episode. Hi, and welcome to another episode of the Empowered Perimenopause podcast with me, Francesca. So in today's episode, I wanted to talk to you about the various areas of your health and day-to-day habits that need to be considered and addressed where applicable, where possible, in order to have a much smoother ride throughout perimenopause, throughout your 40s, and a much more peaceful and gentle arrival at menopause when the time eventually comes. So our daily habits influence our experience of the change in hormonal landscape that we see in our 40s. And once we understand this, once we have this insight, we can really make the most of that. Because our 40s is a rocky ride, and I say ours because I'm here with you. I'm 45 in December, so I still have a good few months. I keep saying I'm nearly 45. I've got a while. But I'm literally right in there, kind of in the middle of this rocky phase. But we can leverage our daily nutrition and our lifestyle habits to really minimize our symptoms or any challenges that various people, because it will be very different from person to person, any challenges that might come up, any flares of, for example, any existing conditions a person might have had, because things like that do tend to flare in our 40s during perimenopause when that hormonal landscape changes. Just any negative experiences generally associated with perimenopause can be minimized if we just know what's happening and what we can do about them. It doesn't need to be a phase that we dread or we hate. We hear so many awful things about it, and I'm sure I'm one of those people as well that's sharing the various, you know, the symptoms and experiences, and I've done that in episodes 2 and 3. But it still doesn't mean it's a phase that we need to dread or really just think we're doomed. It is a natural phase of our amazing womanhood, but we owe it to ourselves to understand what's happening in it and know how to support ourselves. And I really can't emphasize enough how impactful our nutrition and lifestyle habits are on our entire perimenopause experience, physically, cognitively, emotionally, all of the different ways that we're being impacted during this phase in terms of symptoms. Our nutrition and lifestyle habits can make a huge impact, positive impact on that. And also aesthetically, so for example, we can manage changes to our body shape and our weight if we just know why things are changing and what to do. And I'll do a whole episode on that very soon, so do stay tuned. It'll either be the next episode or the one after that. And we just need to really appreciate how our nutrition and lifestyle habits can improve the severity or the intensity of our symptoms tenfold if we just know how to leverage them. So for example, I've talked about this in episodes 2 and 3. I've broken all of this down for you. So if you haven't already listened to those, you don't know what I'm talking about, then do go back to those. But what we can do is help to calm the estrogen roller coaster as much as possible and shelter our body and our nervous system from the sharp swings, the sharp highs and the sharp drops of estrogen that's occurring, you know, pretty much all the time in our 40s. We can calm all of that. We can support our body to ovulate more months than it would if we hadn't intervened, because ovulation is how we make progesterone. So we can minimize progesterone's decline and therefore minimize the symptoms that come with that. So I wanted to go through a number of points that are kind of summary points, because I'm not going to go into too much detail about each and every one of them. I'll save that for sort of separate episodes, but I wanted to do like a kind of rounded, you know, these are the points of the things that we want to be thinking about, things we want to be addressing, identifying, considering for a smoother ride hormonally and, you know, just generally symptoms wise throughout perimenopause and that eventual transition into menopause to make that much, much smoother and happier and easier. So essentially, I'll go through the points that I've got here. So a healthy diet that supports good blood sugar regulation, that is one that has optimal protein intake, a good amount of healthy fats, healthier carbohydrate choices, and plenty of vegetables, all the different colours, plenty of fibre. So that's kind of like the nutshell of a good blood sugar balancing diet, and that is the foundational piece when it comes to managing symptoms, managing our aesthetic goals, managing our weight, managing our body composition, for example. And generally just, all of this, the different symptoms. So how we feel, energy, mood, sleep, all of these different things. The foundational part of that is a good blood sugar balancing diet. And I'll go into this on, again, as I say, in separate episodes. And then it's about identifying and addressing any nutrient deficiencies. The kind of key ones that I'm thinking of here are iron, B12, B6, folate, vitamin D. These are the ones that we can measure in blood work that we can ask our GP to do. There's also lots of private companies out there now where we can kind of maybe action this ourselves if need be. Good sleep and a good healthy circadian rhythm. I'll do a whole episode on sleep, probably loads of them. But essentially, getting good sleep at night and having a good circadian rhythm, which is basically our daily rhythm, our daily pattern of cortisol, essentially. So we know cortisol as the stress hormone, but it's also the hormone that is regulating our circadian rhythm, our body's internal biorhythms, body clock. And that, if that's kind of out of balance, we will have trouble sleeping. We may have trouble falling asleep, staying asleep. And as we move into perimenopause, sleep just becomes affected because of this kind of natural shift in hormones that has an impact on cortisol. Lower progesterone has an impact on our ability to sleep. So we really need to be making sure we are getting good sleep and we do have a healthy circadian rhythm to minimize the chances of those things happening. So looking at our daily routines, our kind of like going to bed and wake up times, what routine is that? How, timing wise, is it in line with a balanced circadian rhythm? Looking at our schedules throughout the day, timings throughout the day around sleep as well. But what we do in the morning has a huge impact on our ability to sleep that night. So looking at habits as a whole. Again, I'll do a whole episode on this, if not plenty more. Good nervous system regulation. So this is essentially looking at stress. Are we managing the stress in our life well? Are we, help and therefore helping to manage cortisol? Are we supporting our nervous system, which is essentially where our stress response is activated from? So are we putting things in place on a day-to-day basis that support our nervous system to kind of manage our stress response? Most of us aren't. So that's a huge place to look. And we're all doing lots of kind of activating things throughout the day, but we're not putting in anything to kind of counterbalance that. Maybe we're doing that like once a week, but we need to be doing that every day. Efficient liver detoxification processes, particularly for the healthy breakdown of our hormones, so the healthy metabolism, it's known as, and clearance of our used hormones, particularly estrogen. Once we use estrogen in the body, it needs to be lost. It needs to go straight away, and that is a pretty goes through an intricate metabolizing process in the liver, and then after the liver, it goes to the gut where it's kind of packaged up and ready to be sent out of the body permanently via our bowel movement. So we also need good digestive health. So that's looking at how efficiently we're breaking down our foods from our meals. Are we chewing really well? Are we absorbing our foods and therefore absorbing the nutrients from them? But also the efficient chewing and that breakdown process of our meals is important for us to form good quality stool, basically, so that we actually have healthy bowel movements and get all of these broken down hormones and other toxins out of our body well. And then also looking at good gut health as a whole. So we have digestive health, there's this whole digestive process, which is one side of gut health. And then the other side is what's actually going on within the microbiome itself. So that is the population of bacteria that we have living in the gut. which should be there, but we want to investigate potentially for any imbalances. So this is also known as dysbiosis, and that could mean that we have low levels of beneficial bacteria that living in the gut and high levels of unfriendly, pathogenic or non-beneficial bacteria living in the gut that can be causing problems. We might have infections with parasites or yeasts or molds, and these can be going back years that we just didn't realise they were there. So investigating for these by way of like a comprehensive stool test, which would usually need to be done privately, because conventionally they would do stool tests that would rule out anything quite sinister, which is very good, very helpful, but they're not necessarily looking at the actual microbiome and what's going on in there. So if you are somebody that's got chronic gut health issues and, really just not getting to the bottom of what's actually going on, then actually looking to investigate that can be really helpful now more than ever. Healthy muscle mass is something we need to be considering, because we're losing a small percentage of our muscle mass each year past age 30. Men are as well. That's something called sarcopenia. It happens to everybody. But it can start to accelerate a little bit in our 40s, like sort of after 40s, especially if we're not doing anything to preserve and continue to build our muscle mass. So muscle is such an important organ. It is actually an organ, and it's our organ of longevity, healthy longevity, strength, bone health, and heart health as well. So we really need to make sure we have a good amount of muscle mass all the time. I'll do another whole episode on muscle quite soon as well, because that's another one to dive into. But we essentially want to do our best to preserve the muscle that we do have while also continuing to build new muscle. So this is all about ensuring optimal protein intake with every meal, because we need enough protein in our meals in order to stimulate something known as muscle protein synthesis. I'll talk about this on the muscle episode, but that's something, it's a process in the body that basically synthesizes, makes new muscle, so build, lays down new muscle mass. But we have to have a certain level of protein coming in from the diet to make sure that that process is happening. And it needs to be quality protein, complete protein with all the different amino acids. So it's protein intake, but also building a habit, making a habit of exercise each week that builds muscle, and limiting any exercise that can break it down. And I'll talk about all of that stuff on a separate episode as well. We want to be looking at our thyroid health as well, just to make sure that we are regularly checking on it to make sure that our thyroid is producing enough of the thyroid hormone known as T4, but also that T4, because that's the kind of most well-known thyroid hormone that you might know if you've ever had your thyroid markers tested with your GP, for example. But we also need to make sure that T4 is being converted into T3, which is the active thyroid hormone that we actually need. It's the one that actually does all the metabolic jobs in the body. So we want to be regularly checking, maybe sort of annually, on markers like TSH, T4, T3, free T4 and free T3. So that gives you a different level of information. And ideally something called reverse T3 as well, if that's possible. But definitely as well, the two thyroid antibodies, which check for autoimmunity, which is also known as the thyroid autoimmunity condition, is known as Hashimoto's. We want to be checking for that, because our 40s can become a time when, because of this shift in hormonal landscape, we can become kind of more prone to developing an autoimmune condition, or if we had any autoimmunity there before, that was sort of pre-existing, it might show its face now, show itself, whereas it wasn't really showing up before. Or if we already knew we had autoimmunity before, whether it's against the thyroid, so whether it's Hashimoto's or even rheumatoid arthritis, for example, it can start to flare, the symptoms can start to flare in our 40s, because this is kind of a time when, as I said, autoimmunity can start to show itself because our protective hormonal landscape starts to shift. So other important blood work markers to consider as well are cholesterol, triglycerides, HbA1c, which is looking at kind of the average glucose readings of the last 3 months. So it gives us a little kind of, none of these are going to be 100% accurate, but it gives us an idea of how you've been managing your blood glucose over the last 3 months. A fasting glucose reading could be helpful as well as looking at immune, kidney and liver markers. So basically that's the base, the complete body work, blood workup, also known as complete blood count, that you could ask your GP for. But I would just say, be aware that the conventional reference ranges that we get from, for example, GP or hospital blood work, they can be quite wide, and they're, because they're looking for the absence of disease, they're not really looking at, you know, kind of the more optimal ranges where we're looking for optimum function before, like way before any disease processes have begun. You know, conventionally, we're looking for the, just making sure that there's no disease processes here. But we want to know that we're catching that, you know, way before there would be, we would be close to developing a disease. So there are conventional blood work reference ranges and there are optimal reference ranges. So a practitioner like myself, for example, or a functional medicine doctor, for example, would be using these optimal reference ranges, which would be a little bit, what's the word? Narrower. Couldn't think of the opposite of wide. So other things that are also important and often really overlooked, because, you know, most people don't really know even about this, but looking at potential mold toxicity in your home or your workplace that could be dampening the immune system and creating certain symptoms and other health problems associated with mold toxicity. So it is important just to rule that out, just in case, if you are somebody that suspects you could be living in mold, it is definitely something you want to remedy or change if possible, or any other toxic or kind of chemical burdens that could be slowing or suppressing your system. So any pre-existing hormonal imbalances as well, such as, you know, when we talk about hormone imbalances, we always think of the sex hormones, we always think of estrogen, progesterone, but any pre-existing imbalances in cortisol. So if the circadian rhythm is out of whack because somebody's always going to bed very late and always waking up very late during the day, if their circadian rhythm's out of balance, then so will their cortisol and potentially their blood sugar regulation as well, which will mean their insulin's out of balance. So if there's any imbalances in cortisol and insulin, it can set the stage for a more rocky perimenopause, because your symptoms can be amplified. So you might find that you have more intense symptoms than, for example, somebody who wasn't going into their 40s with these same imbalances. So that's why stress, sleep and blood sugar regulation are so important. So really the most foundational pieces when it comes to managing our time during our 40s and beyond is our diet, because we want to make sure we're eating a blood sugar friendly and nourishing diet, and we want to make sure we're managing our stress well and looking after our nervous system, and that we're getting good sleep and really looking after our sleep routine and safeguarding that above and all anything. These are the most foundational pieces, and then from there, once those foundational pieces are you know, mastered, then we can start to look at other things. You know, do we need to look at the gut? Do we need to look at blood work and see what's going on there? But sometimes if we just start with improving our stress management and our nervous system support, improving our sleep, eating a blood sugar friendly diet, then we can go to the kind of blood work and see what we're left with, because all of those things would improve a person's blood work, for example. So you can get all those things in place, start feeling better, and then, okay, let's do some testing and see what we're left with. So the severity of a lot of the typical perimenopause symptoms, including weight gain, I know that it's not necessarily a symptom, but it is a kind of impact, something that can start to occur for most women. And it's a big bone of contention. Why am I suddenly gaining weight? You know, why is it mostly around the middle? Why am I not able to manage my weight as easily as I was before, as effortlessly as I was in my 20s and 30s? And why is now suddenly the same exercise I've been doing for years now not really having any impact, or it's actually having the opposite impact, where I'm feeling like I'm gaining weight from it, or always feeling kind of bloated? So it's, you know, all feeling like our body composition is changing. We might suddenly just feel that we're just gaining more body fat, and we can feel that we're losing muscle mass. So the severity of all of that, the symptoms that I've talked about in episode 1 and 2, and the aesthetic stuff like the weight and body composition, because they're not just aesthetic, these are health foundations of good health as well. So the severity of that is usually a direct consequence of existing imbalances. So for example, as I just mentioned, imbalances in cortisol and insulin, but also imbalances in the gut or with your digestive health, any inefficiencies with the liver's hormone metabolism and detoxification processes, nutrient deficiencies, high exposure to what's known as xenoestrogens or hormone disrupting chemicals and other toxins. So I will do separate episodes on the hormone disrupting chemicals and other things as well. But the take home message that I really wanted to leave you with in this episode was that this decade and a bit provides a window of opportunity for you to start to address your health and to really focus on implementing good foundational nutrition and lifestyle habits now and forever. So no more fads or quick fixes, not looking for what you can just do now to maybe lose a little bit of weight, or, you know, really thinking about genuinely caring for your health and wanting to do the things that support it and ditch the things that don't, or, you know, mostly ditch all of the things that don't support it. This is a time to really start to optimize and safeguard your health. But I don't want people to be overwhelmed by any of it. For example, sometimes somebody just needs to increase their protein with all their meals, and then they start to feel so much better and they start to see the benefits physically as well. Sometimes a person just needs to start with tweaking their evening routine so that they have some proper wind down time before bed, and then they start sleeping better. And then the knock-on compound effect of sleeping better night after night means that they start to have this positive impact on so many other things, like their mood, energy, their tolerance to stress, their cognition improves, their brain fog improves, their hot flushes or night sweats improve, because their blood sugar regulation has also started to improve with their better sleep. Their weight, their body composition, all of these things are an impact of sleeping well. Then you might find that you have the energy and motivation to start implementing other helpful habits. Like, you might think, right, now I've got more energy and I'm just feeling better, I want to start lifting weights, or I want to start walking more, or I want to start implementing more time for myself and have more self-care. And you might want to start diving deeper into your gut health, for example, and so on and so on. So it's that knock-on impact. Once we start to manage our stress better, or we start to, or hopefully both, start to sleep better, we start to increase protein with all of our meals, so we're balancing our blood sugar better, it just has this knock-on impact to everything else. Some people can just stop there, others might need to go deeper, but you have to start with the foundational things first before you know whether you need to go deeper. And mindset and attitude is really important as well. So it's important that we don't see the healthy habits as boring things or restrictive things that we won't enjoy, because that's obviously not going to help. We're going to feel like we're doing something temporary. So there has to be a mindset shift as well. So we need to be able to see the things that we need to do to help us feel better, and also the things that we need to stop or reduce, as a good thing versus a sad or restrictive thing. So I've got clients who've really embraced the need to reduce their alcohol, for example, and now they see this as something that's helping them feel better. So when they say no to that second glass that they were actually just having because of either peer pressure or just for the sake of it, now when they say no, they don't feel, oh no, I can't, or no, I'm restricting myself. They actually feel empowered saying no to themselves and the people around them, because they know that that's going to make them feel better, and they're minimizing their symptoms every time they say no. So how could they be, you know, how could they see that negatively or restrictively? So there is that mindset shift of kind of reframing that needs to happen for some people. So again, the message I really wanted to get across today is that there's plenty of nutrition and lifestyle habits or interventions that are really foundational that can help you have a much easier ride of perimenopause, where that hormonal landscape is changing so much. We can taper it by, or I think that's the right word, taper it, sort of minimize it, minimize symptoms, their intensity, their severity, their frequency, their likelihood, by addressing these foundational nutrition and lifestyle habits. At almost 45 now, I know that my sleep could be really bad. It did get really bad when I was about 41. I had about 6 months of really challenging sleep, and therefore everything else was impacted. Anxiety, mood, my periods, brain fog, my weight was all impacted because of this bad sleep bout. But because I knew what to do to sort it, and thankfully I have, and now I sleep really well, I know that my sleep could be bad if I didn't do those things, and therefore all of the other things as well that sleep knocks onto would also be really bad, and I'd just be having an awful time. So we don't, that's the message I want to make to give you, is that we don't have to have an awful time. We don't have to suddenly gain all this weight and not know how to get rid of it, or, you know, just feel awful every day like we're just dragging ourselves through treacle. So we'll get into the details of what these things actually are, these foundational habits. I've obviously touched on it, the fact that it's stress management, blood sugar balancing diet. And when I say diet, I don't mean diet as in the way that the word has been used in the 80s and 90s. I mean the way we eat. So eating in a way that's supportive of our blood sugar balance and providing us with all the nutrients that we need every day for our brain and body cells to function properly, and managing and supporting really good sleep. So those are really foundational. Gut health as well, very foundational. So I'll go into the details of what all of this means in coming episodes. And that's not to say that it's going to be a total breeze for everybody. We all have our own unique biochemistry where we've got our own unique, you know, imbalances that are there for various reasons beyond our control, but we can significantly minimize all of the bad stuff that we hear everywhere these days, all of the horrible symptoms I've talked about in episodes 2 and 3. We can minimize that by doing the things that help and making them part of who we are and part of our new identity as we move into and through our 40s. Because there is an element of needing to adopt a new identity and reframe things. So we will go a layer deeper on the sort of foundational areas that I've briefly touched on. And for on this podcast generally, I'll be breaking down these foundational details in detail for you, and really covering the further layers that some people might need to go to. As I said, some people just need to focus on their stress management, their sleep, their food, and they're fine. You know, they really do start to feel amazing and they sail through. Other people need to do that, get those foundational things in place, but then also start looking a layer deeper as well. Like maybe there's, you know, a mold issue that's impacting them. Maybe there is a histamine issue that's impacting them more. Maybe there is a gut infections that are just not help, you know, they've only got so far with the foundational pieces and now they need to just look a little bit deeper. But it's also the other take-home message as well, is that it's never too late or too early to start working on these foundational health pieces. So no matter what stage or age you are, if you're early 30s and you happen to be listening to this, great, you'll really start to put these foundations in place earlier rather than later. But if you're at the end stages of perimenopause, or you're even postmenopause, it's never too late to put these things into place, because they will have a benefit, they'll have an impact on just on your daily kind of health and well-being, regardless of what stage you're at. If I didn't know this was true, I honestly wouldn't waste my time in this career doing what I do. I would definitely have like exited this industry by now, because I'm just so deeply passionate about teaching as many women as possible what's happening in their bodies during perimenopause and how they can support the change in hormonal landscape and in the best way possible. So stay tuned for future episodes where I'm going to be talking about all of these things that I've touched on today in more detail. And always feel free to get in touch with me with any requests or questions that you have for episode topics. I'll be putting my email address and my Instagram as well in the show notes if you need to get in touch. So thank you for listening, and I'll see you next time. Bye bye. If you found this episode helpful, then please share it with anyone else who you think could benefit. And consider leaving a rating and a review, as this will help the podcast to reach and help more people. And if you need more guidance on your own health journey, you can grab my free guide, 6 Steps to Mastering Your Hormones in Your 40s, over at francescaliparotti.com, where you can sign up for your free copy. Or you'll also find the link in the show notes.